This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. So what happens when a painter and a poet start working together on the same ideas? North Carolina poet Jeffrey Beam found out when he started collaborating with Welsh painter Clive Hicks Jenkins. Both men had collaborated with other artists before, but never as they were creating the work, more or less side by side. The fruit of their labor is a new book, Spectral Pegasus: Dark Movements. It puts Clive's paintings next to Jeffrey's poems and tells the story of the hero's journey through death, resurrection, and redemption. Jeffrey Beam is a poet, performer, and editor, and he joins me now. Jeffrey, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
It's been too long, but I'm glad you're here, and this is a lovely work. You and Clive were introduced by a mutual friend, right? How did you two get together?
Well, a friend, Marley Yeomans, who's a novelist who went to UNC Chapel Hill decades ago. We became friends when she was a student, and she has worked with him. He's illustrated some book covers for her and some vignettes in some of her books, and she at some point just was convinced that the two of us should collaborate. And that was it.
So now the two of you are together. You both hear the same story. You got to meet this guy. You both do. How do you develop the story then, and what became this book?
Well, a meeting was interesting, too, because we only met over the internet. I didn't meet him physically until 2 years later. But we had actually decided to collaborate maybe on another subject, and he started this project, and I found myself writing poems. So we realized that the project had chosen itself at that point. But in a way, too, the collaboration was not just the two of us, because he has a blog called The Art Log, and while he's working, you're seeing his works being created. He's talking about the process. He's talking about the technicalities involved, and people across the world are responding on his blog. So there were three people in particular that were responding while we were working, who really I see as collaborators on the work itself, because they would say things, or we would say something, or he would paint something, or I would write something that somebody would comment on, and it would change the trajectory of the work.
Well, give me an example. How did that work?
Well, the three people that I'm thinking of are Marley Yeomans, the fiction mm-hmm. writer, who always has something interesting to say about poetry, because she's also a poet, but also about visual art, because she and Clive have been related for so long, and she knows so much about these things. And Sarah Parvin, who has contributed a major essay in the book, which sort of traces Clive and mine's work separately, then also how it all sort of came together through this particular project. And a woman by the name of Maria Maestre in Spain, who is just a follower of the blog. For instance, Maria, in the images of the male character, Jordan, in the paintings, you will see his hands taking various positions. And she started writing us from her perspective as a woman in Spanish culture about the culture of the fan and what that whole ancient movement of the fans, the flipping open, the holding it a certain way, and how Jordan's hands in these paintings were taking these various shapes, which made me start thinking about Buddhist mudra, the hand shapes that people take in prayer. So that somehow got inserted into the way I was looking at his hands as I was looking at these paintings.
This also, the series is based on, centered on the Welsh Mary Lwyd tradition.
Mary Lwyd.
Lwyd.
I still haven't probably done that quite correctly, but it's an ancient tradition which pagan involves a spectral horse, someone dressed up in a sheet and a real mare's skull that comes around during the midwinter season, oftentimes the old Welsh New Year, followed by a troop of people dressed up sort of like the living dead, these mummers, and they go door to door and there's a rhyming contest. It's like every other wassail tradition. Eventually, if all goes well, the mummers and the horse are invited in and there's refreshments and general chaos, and then they go on to the next house. And if the house has welcomed them in successfully, then there's good luck. Clive discovered when his father was dying in 1999 that his father had been terrified of this image his whole life. So that created a set of works, big actual drawings in 1999, 2001, which was an exhibition. But Clive decided to go back to the theme in 2015. So if you look at these paintings, you're a Welsh person and you read these poems, you can sort of see the tradition, but for someone who wouldn't know the tradition, it's sort of below the surface, because what Clive and I have done, and what Clive did really with the first set of illustrations too, was take the folklore, really transform it to something else. There's no visitation to a house in this group. There's just the hero, and in this case, the father, and perhaps it's also Clive, is portrayed as a young man through all of these works. In the earlier group, you actually saw Trevor, Clive's father, as an old man, and this younger man that comes in. And the horse is very much a monster in the original group. In this group, the horse changes sex, it changes color, it grows flowers on its hide, the flowers get transferred to the skin of Jordan. It's all a very different sort of experience from the original folklore.
Well, maybe you can give us a sample of the poetry here that you have written, a poem called Flowering Skin.
So this painting shows the moment when the flowers on the skin of the horse have been transferred to Jordan. I have tended you under gray mare shanks, under threadbare linen shrouds, through whirlwind over abyss, snarled in red-ribbed, ribboned solstice rhyme, stumbling, falling, shaving your likeness into memory. I have seen the wind and the stampede, walked beside you in gloomy mournfulness. This restless world, my hermitage of ruin, of lapis lazuli and mist. Father, I never knew what passion bloomed on your skin, but being a man and your son, I know that bruise and bone born of the blood, that wretched wonderment stain, honey milk sweet. I rise from the moonlight world into twilight, fresh from the borderlands, with the river's blue arresting my thought. My skin whispers to your springs of living water, flowering earth outshining enemy darkness, and the wounds, into April's May have ruby ridden.
Jeffrey Beam reading from his new book, Spectral Pegasus Dark Movements. Poet, performer, and educator will be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill on Monday, March 18th. In so many ways, and I think this is in a lot of ways an extension of the kind of work you do, this sort of bringing together of the mystical, the otherworldliness with the everyday palpable reality of living a life. And in so many ways, this was Clive coming to terms too with his father's illness and death.
Well, coming to terms with that. And for me also, my father had died not too long before that period. And also, for Clive, I think at this moment he was just transferring his career from being in theater into becoming a painter. And he had lost a lot of friends to AIDS. And I had experienced the same thing. So we have two gay men who are processing the loss of so many dear friends and their fathers on opposite sides of the ocean. We're both the same age, so we have many common experiences despite being from two different cultures. And yes, it gave me an opportunity to take all of this experience and knowledge that I've had throughout my life, being focused on religious imagery, on the spirituality of nature, Jungian archetypes. All of these were coming together for me, and they're all sort of the same language that Clive used. So it really was, Marley was right. It was a perfect marriage.
And you have, again, in this marriage, and the marriage of heaven and hell, which is very much a part of this union that you talk about, the idea that we enter into our grief, if that's the hero's journey, the hero's journey really is in entering into your life in all of its facets, including the grief and the suffering and the ultimate insult, death.
Well, the hero, of course, faces a lot of trials, and those trials ultimately end suffering. And in the traditional, the Jungian archetype, which, interestingly enough, if you think about it, the Snow White story, it's an archetype that is also feminine. But here are two men. The hero, at some point, has to die to himself. And so he goes into a sleep. So there is a point in the story where Jordan falls asleep or into a deep trance in the forest. And in this painting, you see the white horse, the white mare, the Mary Lude, in this jagged sort of woodland. It's not even a beautiful woodland. It's a very dark forest that he goes to sleep in, just as Snow White is asleep in this dark forest, or Sleeping Beauty.
That is a very old and tried and true trope and a way to enter into this story. That's where Dante's comedy begins, in the dark wood. But this is it, what's fascinating about this is the way in which these stories are eternally true in the hands and the minds of a talented artist, that you can see the eternal truth in these things. And you've been talking about this. How is this different? Because so many of the themes that have been important to you as a poet for, as far as I know, your whole career, or certainly as long as I've known you, what happens and how are these poems different? What happens to you as the artist and poet in this particular project with themes that you've been working with for a long time?
I think, you know, my previous poetry, most of which is a very spare, almost zen-like, haiku-like, and frequently focused on a specific part of nature, a plant, or some experience of being in the natural world. There have certainly been poems written to saints, for example, that sort of relationship to a painting and one particular story. But because this was the broader myth of a hero's journey, I was able to pull in all sorts of things. And plus the great gift of Jordan. The thing we haven't mentioned is that there's a dancer in New York who's dancing figures, and Jordan is the figure that appears in these paintings. And all of a sudden, you know, there was the Jordan River. So I was able to pull in not only the traditional imagery of the hero's journey through mythology and this Welsh tradition, but also all this Christian iconography, particularly with the River Jordan. It was just so wonderful to be able to mesh these things together.
And you were able to articulate and to bring into being a lifelong dream, I understand, and that is to create an antique ballad.
Yes, such a thrill. I mean, I'd always wanted to do that. I've written lullabies. As you know, there are some of my poems that are chanted or sort of half-sung, but I never performed with another performer. So I found someone to record this with me. And you know, when I wrote in response to this painting, I had no idea it was going to come out in a ballad form. Because as a poet, at least for me, I listen and I feel like it's given to me. So that's what was given, and there was the ballad I'd always wanted to write.
Pale Horse, let's listen to some.
Fair Jordan lay on cold, cold ground, his vision there to see. His steed stood guard within the wood, blind Jordan in reverie. A sphere of light rose in his eye, within a raven flaming, a voice rang down the tower tall to consecrate his naming. Rise up, sweet Jordan fair. Your journey's near its ending. Your sickened plight transforms tonight, your heart no more ending.
A clip of Jeffrey Beam singing one of the poems in his new book, Spectral Pegasus, Dark Movements. Jeff's a poet, performer, and educator, going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill on Monday, March 18th. So tell me about this segment of the hero's journey.
Well, this is the painting that I was just describing. And what happens, of course, is when the hero goes into this deep trance, he eventually is resurrected. So that's what you're hearing in the text of this poem. All of a sudden, he sees that everything is one, that he is cured of this grief. You know, the grief is not gone, but the grief is transformed into some sort of relationship to the universe that wasn't there before. The here and the now and the past and the present are all merged, and he comes out as one. So what happens, there are a few more poems left. Jordan and the horse merge. He becomes a centaur during one poem. In the next to the last poem, which is called Birth, you see this image of these flowers coming out of his brain, or his mind, really, his great universal mind. And the journey is past. He's been redeemed, so to speak.
And eternal. You talk about the fact that it stems from this kind of eternal moment, that is, eternity is not a long time. It's
right now.
It's right now, the eternal now. I've just got a little bit of time left, and I want to talk about some of the things that you and I talk about offline that is really at the center of a lot of this. You take a look at what's going on now, the level of anxiety and the way in which people are responding with all kinds of pathological behaviors that are astounding and painful to all of us who have to watch and comment on this stuff. This is, in a way, antidote, and it seems to me what the teachers, great teachers in perennial wisdom has been all about sort of learning that your grief is your life and that when you actually participate in it, things get better. Are we in a foot race? Are we in a race in which we can either come to that conclusion or just blow ourselves apart?
Oh, what That's, a question.
And you've got 30 seconds, Jeffrey. This is what I do to people on this
show.
You
know, what I know that I do is I know that the thing that's lost in the world is our relationship to the spirit. And that all of this trauma that's happening right now is because we have lost that relationship to the spirit. And whatever I can do through my work to attempt to heal that, that's how I've always seen my work, really from the fifth grade when I started writing poetry. Somehow that was the message that was given to me, is that's what my poetry was meant to do, and that's what I've tried to do. Whether what one thing that I do is enough, I just hope that there are other people doing enough that it will be accomplished.
Thank you for your contribution, Jeffrey Beam, poet, performer, editor, and the author of Spectral Pegasus, Dark Movements. Jeff, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Jeffrey's going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill on Monday, March 18th. You can find details about that and other upcoming events at our website, stateofthings.org, where you can also sign up for our newsletter and get a daily preview of our lineup. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brooklyn. Robin Copley's our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio.